troubled executions in Oklahoma and Arizona are raising questions over whether the drugs being used to carry out death sentences are flawed. In Arizona, convicted murderer Joseph Wood took almost 2 hours to die. Execution by lethal injection should take no more than about 10 minutes. Arizona, like other states, has been forced to buy new drug combinations because the maker of a widely used sedative has stopped making the drug. Michael Kiefer is a reporter with the Arizona Republic. He witnessed the controversial execution of Joseph Wood, and he joins us now. Michael Kiefer, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Arizona Department of Corrections Director Charles Ryan and Governor Jan Brewer insist that the execution of Joseph Wood was not botched. But tell us what you saw at Wood's execution.
I've said many times that I've watched, this is the fifth execution I've witnessed. And generally what happens is the person being executed says his last words, and then the drugs start to flow, and the person puts his head down and or head back and eyes close, and that's it. It takes about 10 minutes. I was at one that took close to 30, but it was the person being executed was absolutely motionless through that. There was no movement, and this time it started that way. Mr. Wood was very quickly sedated, and then after about 5 minutes, he opened his mouth. It almost looked like a burp, and people in the room sort of started. Then a minute later, he started opening his mouth, and then it became more and more regular, and it went on for an hour and a half as we sat there wondering if he was going to die, wondering if someone was going to stop the execution, if they were going to push more drugs in. We didn't know. This was unprecedented.
It must have been agonizing to watch.
Well, people ask me, did it look as if he was suffering? And I can't say it did. And I think that is the issue that the state is going to say. You know, cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment hinges on pain and suffering. So it's really hard to say if this was actually suffering. It was difficult to watch. I get the feeling that what we were seeing was someone whose brain had been basically wiped out, and we sat there watching as the body died. It was, it took place within a soundproof chamber. But whenever the medical person who, we don't know if it was a doctor, if it was a physician's assistant, the protocol doesn't specify, that was the information that the state refused to turn over before the execution took place. But anyway, when this medical team leader would go out and check the consciousness of Mr. Wood, then he would turn on a microphone, and then you could hear this sound in the background, this deep snoring, sucking sound. And you know, I've heard a lot of debate since then, mostly by people who weren't there, that there is a dispute over whether it was snoring or gasping. And I would ask you, what's the difference? Mm-hmm. You know, snoring is gasping. It's the throat being closed off. And that was definitely the sound we were hearing. And it was quite loud when the microphone went on. And the microphone would go off, and we would just be watching this sort of fish-like. I mean, several people have described it that way. His Wood's mouth opening and closing in just sort of a strange manner. It was not natural looking. I can't say it was horrible looking. It just wasn't natural looking.
Mm-hmm. Joseph Wood's slow death raised questions about the viability of lethal injections and the combination of drugs being used for those injections. What about Arizona's cocktail? What drugs are being used in Arizona's lethal injections?
Well, Arizona in this particular execution used the combination that was used in Ohio of a cocktail of midazolam, which is similar to Valium. It's the brand name when you have surgery is called Versed, and with hydromorphone, which is a narcotic, an opiate, and a very powerful one. So you would imagine that it would kill you. Well, it in fact killed him. Of course it did. But in the past, when they've used thiopental and then they used pentobarbital, you didn't see anything. I get the impression that this is what death by midazolam looks like. In fact, the reason I was there was because there had been controversy over the use of midazolam in executions in Ohio, in Florida, and in Oklahoma. And knowing that there was a possibility of problems here, I asked if I could witness this particular execution.
I'm wondering, I have not heard this asked very often, but I'm sure it has been asked from time to time. Why do death chambers not use the same drugs that veterinarians use, say, to euthanize animals?
Veterinarians use pentobarbital. In fact, the big uproar when they switched from thiopental to pentobarbital was, oh, well, that's what they kill animals with. Well, yes, but it was effective. And it was being used by itself as a one-drug protocol. And then the company that made that, Lundbeck, put marketing controls on so that it could no longer be used. So there was a period during which it was available from, you know, distribution houses. But then that drug dried up, like last November, I think, was when the last batches that could be used for execution reached their expiration dates.
There have been some calls from politicians for states to return to older methods of execution, hanging, electric chair, even firing squad. Is that a conversation being had in Arizona at any level?
Not yet, but I hear that a lot. But I have trouble believing that we will do that. In Arizona, we originally used death by hanging. And then, I forget the exact year, there was an overweight woman who was hanged, and her head popped off and rolled around on the floor. Everyone was so horrified, they went to the gas chamber. Then in the 1990s, there was an execution by gas that was so horrifying that they changed the constitution and switched over to death by lethal injection. And so I think execution methods have more to do with the witnesses than they have to do with the so-called humanity of putting people to death. And so, you know, with lethal injection, we sort of had the golden age of capital punishment, because you'd watch it. It looks peaceful. It looks quiet. Some of the drugs they use in some protocols have no other purpose than to completely paralyze you so you can't move. And again, it looks very, very peaceful. So people are sort of, you know, rattling their sabers and saying, well, we should shoot them. We should hang them. I don't know if people are going to watch that. I have to say, every time I write a story about the death penalty, I am bombarded with people suggesting even more violent ways to kill people. It's kind of scary sometimes.
I kind of get the sense in listening to a lot of this, Michael Kiefer, that this has made you something of an expert and a public figure in an area where you would just as soon not be either.
You know, people assume that I'm against the death penalty, but I I'm not really. I mean, there have been cases that I have thought where it was justified, but I think it's applied randomly, and I think it's difficult to carry out. I think it's become impractical, but I have to say that the less you know about it, the easier it is to have strongly held convictions, you know, one way or the other, for or against, and the more you know about it, as in most things, the more complex, the more confusing it becomes.
Michael Kiefer is a reporter with the Arizona Republic. He was a witness to the controversial execution of convicted murderer Joseph Wood. Michael Kiefer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Joining us now are Scott Coffey, deputy public defender with Clark County, who has represented defendants in capital murder trials, and Republican Assemblyman John Hamrick, who is a former law enforcement officer and a supporter of the death penalty. John Hamrick was also a supporter of the governor's request for a new execution chamber in Nevada. Scott Coffey and Assemblyman Hamrick, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good morning. Before we talk about the costs associated with putting people to death in Nevada, we should probably talk about the recent problems in Arizona and two other states, too. Assemblyman Hamrick, you just heard about the problems Arizona went through with the execution of Joseph Wood. Does that give you any concerns or reservations about resuming executions here?
Yes and no. I mean, it's what the individual went through was tragic. It never should have happened. And as the reporter stated, he thought the individual was unaware of what was going on, but it certainly didn't make the viewing public, that those that were witnessing it, any more comfortable. But I think we need to get absolutes, and I'm not sure how we assure absolutes in our society, but we need to get absolutes that should we go forward with the death penalty and make sure the chemicals are sufficient. And even if they're bought internationally, I appreciate where one manufacturer has decided not to do it, but there's a world market out there.
Have you reconsidered your support of the death penalty in the wake of some of these recent events with botched executions and such?
I'm still in favor of the death penalty, and I think the vast majority of society would be also.
What kinds of crimes do you think warrant the death penalty?
Yeah, when we say death penalty, I don't want to be cavalier or carte blanche about this, but I think murder for hire should be eligible, murder of a police officer, and murder in prison are the three primary areas that I believe should warrant the death penalty.
Mm-hmm. Scott Coffey, it's your job to sometimes defend people facing capital punishment. Is this an acceptable punishment for the state to impose in the right circumstances?
Whether you find it morally acceptable or not, it's a broken system. I mean, it simply doesn't work. We aren't getting people executed when death sentences are imposed. Of 130 death sentences in Nevada, we've only had 12 executions. 11 of those people were volunteers. So even if a death sentence is imposed, you have less than a 1% chance of being forced onto death row. It's not a very good use of resources.
You have said that the messy executions in Arizona and Ohio and Oklahoma could be used in legal challenges to capital punishment here in Nevada. Tell us how.
Well, absolutely. There's a protocol in place. The Nevada protocol, last I heard, and the protocol is not open. There's freedom of information request in to find out if there are any new protocols that have been put forward. But they rely on these old drugs, this sodium thiopental, and they're not available. They're going to be expired at this point. These are pharmaceuticals. They're like a drug you have on the shelf. If you've ever seen The Wolf of Wall Street, where they got the old Quaaludes and had that bad experience where they didn't kick in for a while. It's the same thing with these sorts of drugs. They have an expiration date. So we can't get the drugs to kill people. When Oklahoma went on these last couple of executions, they actually bought the drugs from a Louisiana hospital without telling the hospital who they were and why they were buying it. It is impossible to get the appropriate drugs. So we're going to these new mixes.
And the hospital, as it turned out, was not happy, apparently.
Not happy at all.
Quite displeased with that. Even with Nevada facing a number of legal challenges, Scott Coffey, would the state have the ability to put someone to death if a warrant for execution were issued?
That's a very debatable question. The execution chambers was in the Carson City Prison. That was decommissioned in January or February 2 years ago. The death chamber is still being cleaned, but the rest of the building's about to fall down. The building was an old hotel that had been purchased by the state when Lincoln was in office. It's one of the oldest prisons in the country. They're talking about making it a tourist attraction now, is my understanding. And it's not clear that we have any place to be able to do it. There was a request for funds with the state legislature last term. It started at $385,000. It was up to $700,000 by the time the numbers came out, at least according to some of the news agencies. And that wasn't paid for. There was a suggestion of moving death chamber to southern Nevada, and that was going to cost millions of dollars, several millions. So it's not clear how quickly that could be done.
Yeah, you said it's not clear. Is there any place else in Nevada that could be used for a capital punishment?
No, not currently.
Now, Assemblyman Hamrick, you were a part of the government. You were representing Nevada's 2nd District when the execution chamber was decommissioned a couple of years ago. Give us a little bit of background. Why was it closed?
Well, I'm not sure you want to call it a privilege, but I toured the death chamber in the old Nevada State Prison. And there's pending legislation to make it a tourist attraction, including the death chamber. But because it is very, very old. But the chamber, if I may describe it for the audience, as you walk in, it was, I believe, on the third or fourth floor. And you walk in, and it's, the gallery, for lack of a better term, is very, very small. But there's a glass wall and the table, because we had lethal injection in this state, at least at that time. And you see the table and the straps for the hand, for the head, and for the legs. And it's a very sterile type of environment. And but it is stark when you're sitting and you realize what it's there for. I mean, I don't think Mr. Coffey or anyone listening should talk about this or take this in a very cavalier manner. We're talking about a very, very serious topic, but the chamber has been decommissioned. But I believe, according to our Constitution, The death chamber has to be within a certain mileage of the state capitol for the governor. And going back to old days, the governor for clemency and for pardons had to be within a certain time frame or mileage of the death chamber. So I don't think, until we change the Constitution, I don't think the death chamber, if there is one, would ever come down south. It would have to stay up north. Whether it went to Lovelock, I'm not sure. But, you know, there's a time and mileage requirement for the death chamber to be near the governor.
You said third floor of the prison was where it was located. But how many rooms? What's the capacity like?
I'd say when you walk in, the capacity wouldn't be more than 15 or 20, the gallery, for the gallery. But in the chamber itself, I'm sure you could probably get five or six individuals. I'm medical personnel and perhaps a warden or a senior official from the prison at that point to oversee what was going on.
Yeah. Scott had noted at the beginning of 2012 it was decommissioned. What was the reasoning behind the closure?
Well, at that point, the state prison had been closed for a while, and I think the governor knew that there would be a deep debate coming and the cost of it, and I'm still in favor of it, but I think the availability of drugs and things, they just shut it down. As Scott has said, they're still cleaning it by requirement because you never know if it is going to be used. But my gut feeling says that chamber will probably never be used again. Mm-hmm. If it's happened, they'll have to build a new one.
Scott Coffey?
There was also the prison at Carson City. It was a $7 million financial savings by shutting down that whole prison facility. They were going to have to retrofit the whole facility. There were pipes leaking and all kinds of other problems, and it was part of the whole shutdown at the at the prison budgetary.
Now, Assemblyman Hamburg, the legislature's got the new session coming up at the beginning of 2015. Will it approve the $700,000 needed for a new execution chamber?
I think, keeping in mind, and I don't want to get into a partisan issue here,
sure,
but at some point there's a practicality we have to deal with. With the majority party both in the state Senate and in the state assembly, chances are that may not happen. Senator Sigelblum has already indicated that he will take action to make sure that's taken off the table. And so we'll just see what happens in the two chambers as the session goes along.
Is there a less expensive or simpler way that the Department of Corrections can upgrade the execution chamber in the event a warrant is issued?
I don't have an answer to that because I think there's a lot of technical issues that if we had to upgrade, I'm sure all the equipment in the death chamber would have to be removed and forgive the euphemistic term, but state-of-the-art equipment would have to be brought in. And I'm just not sure whether the legislature would approve the funding, and I'm not sure whether or not, even if it did, if the governor would ever sign the death warrant. We know there's many, many people still sitting on death row, and the governor has not signed a warrant for, I think, since 2005, I think. And I'm no expert on that, but it's been
nearly a decade.
Nearly a decade since the last death warrant was issued.
2006, I'm told.
Okay.
Your producer. Right. So you still nearly a decade. Our number is 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. We're talking about the death penalty in Nevada. We want to get your take on it as well. Is it a matter of a too lengthy appeals process? Is it a matter of a violation of the Eighth Amendment against cruel and unusual punishment? Do you think lethal injection is cruel and unusual? Or do you think that the lengthy appeals process that has kept some convicted felons on death row for close to three decades is at fault in Nevada? And what should be done in this state? 702-258-3552 or knprnews.org. We'll start with John in Las Vegas. John, thanks for calling and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning.
My view is like this. If you are a child molester, you're convicted of killing a child through sexual mischievousness, you should be put to death. Mm-hmm. If you're put to death, what about the people who went through all this pain and agony? People who molest children and their children die. People who break into people's houses and kill them. I don't think, once you're convicted to death, you should be taken from that spot to a location and put to death. All these lengthy appeals do nothing but cost us money, takes up space, and these people, they have forfeited their right to live. Once they molest a child or molest somebody else, sodomize somebody, and that person dies, they should be automatically put to death. No appeals, no nothing. Because What are these victims going through? What are they going through at the time that this person is doing this to them? And now everybody wants to be sorry and feel sorry for those who have been proven, it has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, all questions answered, this person did it.
This person did it. Very good. John, thank you so much for your call. 702-258-3552. Scott Coffey, I would imagine you get that kind of sentiment a lot. You've probably heard a lot of the kinds of things that John was saying there.
Absolutely. And, you know, it might even make some logical sense if we had a perfect system, but we don't. There have been a number of innocent people who have been released from death row because of the appellate process. Is it worth that sort of additional cost of executing an innocent person? Because it probably has and certainly will happen if there was no appellate process. We have people released all the time. So it's not unusual. The system's not perfect.
So do the botched executions in Arizona and Ohio also tell us that there needs to be more transparency to the process? There's been a lot of talk about in the courtroom saying we want to know where the drugs are coming from. We want to know who is making them. We want to know how the state is obtaining these things. And I'm wondering about that side of things as well when you discuss lethal injection.
Absolutely, there needs to be transparency in the process. What has happened is we went to compounding agencies who will mix up special drugs for states, and they're not regulated by the FDA, and we've had problems with that. There have been outbreaks of various meningitis, things like that, that have infected the drugs because they're not really regulated by the FDA. That's just for the drug handlers. This execution in Arizona, for example, one thing that wasn't pointed out in the interview was he was injected 15 times, had 15 times the amount that they originally thought was going to be necessary to kill him, and there's claims that there were 15 separate injections. Effectively, you've got human experimentation, and that's not something that should be happening when we have a death penalty if we're going to do it as a civilized society. The death penalty has been a long experimentation into how to kill people kindly, and it's never really worked out. It goes back to the guillotine, where some botched beheadings by axe and sword, they developed a guillotine during the French Revolution. That didn't turn out to be a kinder way to execute people, and it continues. We've had the same thing with the electric chair, where people have forgot to wet the sponge and effectively cooked people where they sat. There's a history of it.
Yeah. John Hamburg, what do you make of the notion of transparency? That the process needs to be more open to the public, just in terms of what's happening, who manufactures the drugs, things of that sort.
Well, I think that's an absolute. As a society, if we're going to have a death penalty, I mean, we certainly deserve to know it. As far as FDA, I'd like to take them off the table. I don't think that's germane to this discussion, because I think each state should determine what is correct compound that would be used in their death chamber. FDA is still a political entity, and I would hate to see politics be involved because of certain national issues. I think the states determine that, get FDA off the table. Again, this is my conservatism coming out. I just don't think the federal government needs to be involved with this issue. It's a state's issue, and this voting public of a given state determines what that state will or will not do.
Mm-hmm. Scott Coffey.
And just so there's no misunderstanding, I wasn't suggesting that the FDA needed to approve the necessary drugs or tell the states what to do. But what had happened is these compounding facilities weren't approved by the FDA, so the people manufacturing the drugs, and we've always used pharmaceuticals in the death penalty in the past until we've had this dry up because Europe won't produce them and sell them to us anymore. That's what I meant by FDA approval, not the FDA should control the states. I agree with my compatriarch here.
Our number is 702-258-3552, 702-258-3552. Bill in Las Vegas joins us now. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Why can't injections of morphine be used, or sleeping pills? People commit suicide peacefully with sleeping pills. Doctors sometimes put cancer patients out of their misery with a little extra morphine. Why all this confusion about what drug and old pharmaceuticals and new and so forth? I'd like to get an answer for that.
All right, Bill, thanks very much. Scott Coffey, why not do something like just an intentional overdose of something like morphine?
You know, we've had that question bantered around. I am not a medical doctor, so I don't have a good answer for you. I assume that the people are working on this or trying to do it in the most efficient way that they can when they come up with these sedatives and these other things to try to make it quick and relatively painless. The problem is the best minds that have worked on it so far haven't done very well.
So, John Hembrick, why not something like an overdose of a sedative like morphine?
Well, I mean, then you're taking a crapshoot on that, because our body mass, and your two guests today, our body mass might be considerably different than somebody else's body mass. And does it take 2 pills or 50 pills? And I'd hate to leave this to an inexact science. We need to make sure it's a definitive formula and a definitive way of ensuring death. But to give somebody a bottle of Nidol is not a solution.
We are talking about the death penalty in Nevada. It's estimated that we'll need about $700,000 for a new execution chamber in this state. The old execution chamber was decommissioned a couple of years ago. And we're talking about whether lethal injection and the death penalty are ultimately cruel and unusual, or if it is just a matter of a lengthy appeals process and it is, in fact, an appropriate penalty for some crimes. We'd like to know what you make of that and what you make of some of the recent botched executions in several states across the country. Whether you support or oppose the death penalty in Nevada, we'd like to know what you think. 702-258-3552 is our number, 702-258-3552. Or knprnews.org. Kent joins us from Las Vegas. Kent, thanks for calling and welcome to the program. Hi, Kent. Thanks for calling and welcome.
Well, thank you so much. My comment is I've been involved in death row ministries in South Carolina and was employed for a brief time at Ely State Prison also, where the current death row is located. The whole business of death is crazy. I remember the first time I went into the death chamber in South Carolina to administer Holy Communion to a man who was going to die that night. I was practically strip searched going in. The communion kit I bought that had bread and wine in it, they wouldn't allow me to use. They were afraid that I might kill the inmate before the state did. It was an isolating experience with, going through multiple checks to get in to see the inmate. And why do we need a death chamber if we're going to kill people? The prison have hospitals. There's one in Ely State Prison. There's one in Carson City. And, you know, you have a gurney. You have an IV bag. And I don't think you need to go to the expense of doing this crazy isolating experience before you kill a person.
Kent, if you stay on the line for just a second, Assemblyman John Hamrick, there's an element, I guess, of practicality in what Kent is talking about. I imagine hospitals would not necessarily be too eager to be
well, the
state hospitals would. Has anything like that been discussed?
Not to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I think there would be a certain amount of security concerns and staff and access, although I believe at some point after the execution, the body either goes immediately to the coroner's office or to a medical examiner of some type, and that might be at a local hospital. But I would frown if the death penalty continues. I would frown on doing that into a public facility.
Kent, thanks very much for your call. 702-258-3552 is our number. That's 702-258-3552. I wanted to ask you guys about money. The most recent figures from UNLV's Criminal Justice Department found defending the average capital case in Clark County costs just under $230,000 for a public defender. For an appointed private lawyer, it's closer to $290,000. Are we getting the most for our tax dollars, or is there a more efficient way to prosecute these criminals? Scott Coffey?
Well, first off, those numbers are a small portion of the cost involved. That's just the attorney cost at trial level. It doesn't include the appeals. It doesn't include experts, travel, anything like that. The numbers are probably double or triple that when you put those things into play, because every death case is going to have a number of psychological experts, exams. If we don't do it at the trial level, it goes to the appeal, and it will come back on what's called post-conviction, and somebody will claim that I didn't do a good job as a defense attorney, and we'll have to start the whole process over. So those are necessary costs. You can't work those out of the system. The problem is probably with the amount of filings. Under the prior administration here in Clark County, at one point we had over 80 pending death penalty cases. That was the most in the country. To put it in perspective, Los Angeles County, with five times our population, had 33 at the time. The current administration with Steve Wolfson's done a better job. They've started to cut back on the filings on cases where it may not be appropriate, and they've started to clean out some of the old cases. We've got a little less than 60 pending right now. But remember, these numbers that you're quoting, even if it was just this $200,000 bottom line number, is for filing, not for getting a death sentence. Half those cases are going to resolve based on the 100 or so cases we've looked at. Of the cases that go to trial, only about 1 in 3 are you going to get a death sentence. So you're about 1 in 6 of those cases. That's $1.2 million for every death verdict that you get before trial, before experts, anything else.
So, John Hamburg, how concerned should we be about the costs of prosecuting capital cases and carrying out the death sentence?
We should be concerned, but I think at some point that equation has to be taken out of the discussion, because I think society, at least today, the society mandates us to go forward. And until the voters, and we had a conversation while we were on break, but if your listeners have a good opinion or strong opinion one way or the other on this issue, they should contact the members of the state legislature, whether it's a state senator or a state assembly individual. And if they belong to an organized group, whether it's a church group or a skeet or bowling, a bridge club, I mean, I don't care, but some community group, let us know.
It seems to me that capital punishment, like a lot of other social issues, tends to be an issue where we see hardened positions on either side of the issue. Are you saying that legislators are still really eager to hear from constituents that are listening to what they have to say about this issue and others?
I'm not going to speak for anybody else. Mm-hmm. I am. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I hope some of your listeners are sitting down, because I work for them. I'm retired. I don't have any other sources, my retired annuity. But, I work for my constituents. And so, yeah, I listen to them.
Scott Coffey?
And it's been an open issue in other states. You know, in the last 7 years, you've seen New Jersey, New Mexico, Illinois, Connecticut, and Maryland all abolish the death penalty. Even with limited death penalty, as somebody suggested earlier, perhaps for killing officers or death of a prison guard, some situation that you can't control, you would cut the numbers from 50 or 60 pending to 1 or 2 in the state. You could cut the vast majority of this cost out if you limited it to very few situations.
702-258-3552 is our number, 258-3552. Ken in Las Vegas is with us now. Ken, welcome.
Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to comment on the appeals process. You know, I think that it's a huge waste of resource. If a person is convicted by a jury of their peers and sentenced, I personally think that the penalty or the sentencing should be carried out within 30 days, and that's it. I mean, these people who use the death penalty as a deterrent to crime, I think it can be if a person who's going to commit a crime and knows that they're going to be sitting in jail for 20 or 30 years, appeal after appeal after appeal, then that doesn't it's not an effective deterrent, I don't think. So I think if the sentence is carried out quickly, after 30 days after conviction and sentencing, perhaps then the deterrent would be more effective in that regard. People would think twice before committing a murder or something like that.
All right. Ken, thank you very much for your call. Scott Coffey, quick response.
It's important to understand that our local legislators don't really have much of an option in that. If they decided to say, 10 minutes after a verdict, we take somebody out back and shoot them, the federal government would step in immediately and shut down the process. The appeals process is mandated by the United States Constitution, and there is no way for Nevada government or California government to get rid of it.
John Hamburg, we have some 82 people on death row in Nevada, no execution chamber. How does this logjam get unstuck? What needs to change to alter the situation?
Well, if the topic wasn't so serious, I'd have a rather flippant answer, but I don't have a good answer. I mean, it's going to hopefully this coming legislative session will come up with revenue, but the number on death row, as soon as the, if the governor decides to start signing death warrants, that's going to push an issue. That's going to force, you know, the hole's going to be open up, and now then we're going to have to react. But I think at the present time, there if there is no imminent issuance of a death warrant, who knows what the legislative body will do, but I certainly will vote in favor of the funding.
Assemblyman John Hamrick represents Nevada's 2nd District. Scott Coffey is a deputy public defender with Clark County. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dave.